I'm going to go ahead and get started. Steve, I know you're ready. Our last session is on the auditor's reporting model. As I'll discuss in a few minutes, we've been doing a lot of work, a lot of outreach on this effort. The investor advisory group also heard a presentation last week. So we're interested, want to share with you some of the comments from what we've learned from the IAG, and also get, most importantly, comments from you as we help move forward. But to help us get started, let me turn it over to our board member, Steve Harris. Steve?
Well, thank you, Jennifer, and we're into the home stretch on a dispassionate subject, which, as Arnie pointed out, there'll probably be little debate and little discussion, so I assume people get out of here in a hurry because nobody will have anything to say. But as you pointed out, earlier this week, the board heard a presentation from Marty and his team on the staff's outreach efforts to investors, preparers, audit committee members, auditors, academics, and others on possible changes to the auditor's report. At that meeting, Chairman Doty instructed the Office of the Chief Auditor to move forward on development of a concept release for the board's consideration on or about June 30th, a roundtable discussion in the fall, and a proposed standard in the first quarter of 2012. And I do periodically have discussions with the chairman about whether we're leading or whether we're following the international community, but I do want to commend the chairman and also the former acting chairman, Dan Geltzer, for their leadership on this issue, and I think we are leading the world, and I think we have that responsibility. Today, you will hear an overview of the staff's findings and have an opportunity to discuss some possible changes to the auditor's report. As I said at Tuesday's open meeting, the board's mandate from the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002 is to protect the interest of investors in the preparation of informative, and I want to stress the word informative, audit reports. And I believe that this project is an important step for the board to take in fulfilling that directive. The usefulness of the auditor's report has been studied by various groups and organizations for decades, both domestically and internationally, resulting in virtually no change. The fact that questions about the usefulness of the audit report have resurfaced around the world is not surprising. Given recent events, and I am referring to the financial crisis, as well as the increasing complexity of business and financial reporting standards, it is no wonder investors are asking for more information. Last week at a meeting of the PCOB's Investor Advisory Group, Joe Carcello, who is also a member of that group in addition to this one, made what I thought was a compelling presentation regarding investors' key views on improving the auditor's report. Gus Sauter of Vanguard, Norman Harrison, formerly of Breeden Capital, and Ann Yerger of the Council of Institutional Investors joined Joe in making the presentation. Also participating in the research and preparation of the presentation were Brandon Becker of TIA CREF, Michael Head of TD Ameritrade, Bonnie Hill of Eichen Blue, Pete Nachtway of Legg Mason, Ann Simpson of CalPERS, and Eric Vincent of Osprey Management. Under Joe's leadership, the group surveyed leaders from investment banks, hedge funds, private equity funds, mutual funds, endowments, and pension funds on the usefulness of the current auditor's report and suggestions for improvements. Responses to that survey represented well over $8 trillion under management, and it was clear that investors want more from auditors. In particular, the survey results indicate that investors want auditors to discuss their assessment of management's estimates and judgments and how the auditors arrived at that assessment. They also want auditors to discuss areas of high financial statement and audit risk, unusual transactions, and the quality of an issuer's accounting practices and policies. Investors have indicated a need for this type of information to better anticipate certain events of issues or issues impacting the financial statements. They cite the recent financial crisis as an example of where expanded auditor reporting in advance of the crisis may have been helpful in assessing the quality of the financial statements underlying their investments. The auditor's reporting model has been discussed several times over the past few years by both this group and the board's investor advisory group. Investors have long indicated that they are the auditor's customer, and therefore the auditor's responsibility is to report in a manner which meets their needs. It's clear that investors are seeking more useful and relevant information from the auditor beyond the current pass-fail auditor's report. And investors are looking to the auditor, not management, not the audit committee, but to the auditors for this additional information. Before turning the discussion over to Jennifer, I would like to commend you and your team, Marty, in absentia. Marty, we commend you for your dedication to advancing this project. And I will leave you with one last quote from Michel Barnier, the Commissioner for Internal Market and Services at the European Commission, who said at a recent EC conference on its green paper, quote, "The status quo is not an option for the auditing world. It's not about changing for the sake of change, but to reply to very real needs which we can no longer ignore." Jennifer, I turn it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Well said, and good way to start off our session. So in our last session of the day, I have two very important goals for this session. First is to provide you with an overview of the outreach that we, Marty, I, and I'm joined by members of my team, Jessica Watts, Dan Mudzik, and Deanne Jules. We've been actively busy since October doing outreach with investors, preparers, audit committee members, auditors, and others on the auditor's reporting model. So I'll provide you with an overview of what we've heard. And secondly, and most importantly, in my view at least, and will help us in moving forward with the concept release, is to get your views, input from you, on some possible areas we've identified, we've heard, of ways the auditor's report could change. So your thoughts on that will be most welcome and quite relevant and timely to us as we move forward, as we busily move forward working on the concept release. Regarding our outreach, I know many of you have come and told me that you've listened to the presentation that we gave to the board 2 days ago. And to those of you who did that, I give you gold stars. For those who were not able to, no worries. It's available on our website. You can listen to a webcast. I think you can get an iPod. You listen to it on your iPod, Jessica tells me. So you could go ahead and do that. It was a presentation we gave to the board, which about 30 minutes or so, Marty and I, followed by an hour and a half discussion, questions from our board members, which brought out a lot of issues from our outreach. So I don't have time to go through that in detail today, and many of you have already heard it, but I want to share with you some of the highlights to put then the discussion in context of possible changes. Last October, first to set the stage, all last year at each of our SAG meetings, we've talked about the auditor's reporting model to some extent or another with the standing advisory group. Last April, we had a very in-depth discussion talking about it. We got into breakout sessions talking about in more detail what the board could do, what were the areas of change that were needed. And then we decided really largely in large part, based on advice from this group, we undertook additional outreach, and we announced last October that we were planning to do outreach with investors and other users on changes to the auditor's report. So from October, as soon as our SAG meeting ended practically, through March of this year, the Office of the Chief Auditor conducted in-person meetings and held conference calls with over 80 individuals, consisting of investors, preparers, audit committee members, auditors, regulators and standard setters, and academia. The participants represented a very diverse group of organizations and companies, both domestic and international, as well as small, medium, and large size companies. As we went through our outreach, we first met with investors. Certainly, they've expressed loud and clear, not just recently, but for decades, that change is needed. So we wanted to first meet with investors. Our mission is to investors to find out exactly what changes were needed in the report, what they wanted, and to figure out how that could be done. We then met with preparers, auditors, audit committee members to share with them what we've been hearing from investors and to get their thoughts on how changes could be made or any concerns they had regarding some of the areas for change that investors were seeking. So let me tell you what we heard from investors first. One theme came across very loud and clear, and really in every single discussion that we had. Investors desire change. And there's, in all the areas of change, and I wouldn't say one investor had the exact same list as another, but certainly what came across was five key areas where change, where they would like to see change occur. The first is they want to know more about the audit or what the auditor did. They'd like to know what information, you know, what risks the auditor identified. They'd like to know what the auditor's materiality assessments were. Some would like to know about the engagement statistics. So they'd like to know how many hours were spent on significant areas in the financial statements. And also independence. They'd like to know more about auditor independence, potentially some of the types of issues that the auditor discusses with the audit committee about matters affecting auditor's independence. So first was more about the audit or what the auditor did. Second area, they'd like to know the auditor's views on the company's financial statements or what did the auditor find. I think many of the areas that Joe's group touched on at the IAG meeting last week or made a presentation about, several of those areas I think fall into this particular category. It goes into auditors' views on management's estimates and judgments and areas of high risk. Could include difficult or contentious issues, auditors' views on accounting policies. So that's the second area. The third is investors would like to see clarifications in certain language used in the current auditor's report. For instance, there's nothing in the auditor's report today that describes anything about the auditor's responsibility for fraud. They'd like to see, investors realize auditors do have a responsibility for fraud, so they'd like that more clearly articulated in the auditor's report. Also, the auditor provides a report based on reasonable assurance that the financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects. They'd like a better understanding of what it means. What does reasonable assurance mean? They know it's not absolute, but it does represent a high level of assurance. So at minimum, they like to see that explained. And another is the disclosures that, you know, we just had a discussion about disclosures. They know an auditor has a responsibility to evaluate disclosures as part of the financial statements, so articulate that responsibility in the report. The four key area that came through from investors is they like to have clarity, or some would say enhanced responsibility for auditors' responsibility for information outside of the financial statements. So that includes MD&A, non-GAAP information, and earnings releases. The auditor's responsibility today is to read and consider other information. So they read and consider the MD&A to determine whether anything in the company's MD&A is materially inconsistent with the financial statements or represents a material misstatement of fact. Some have said they'd at least like to understand that. Some have said they thought the auditors may audit that. So at least articulate what the responsibility is. And some have said it might be nice to have some additional auditor, you know, some type of assurance responsibility, auditor's responsibility for that other information. And the fifth key area is investors would like to obtain information similar to key issues shared between the auditor and the audit committee. Many investors know that the auditors have a very robust dialogue and they have required communications to the audit committee on many of the areas they're interested in, such as significant accounting policies, management judgment and estimates, among others. At the IAG meeting last week, the themes from investors were very consistent with what we heard in our outreach. So after we met with investors, our next step was to meet with preparers, audit committee members, and auditors. And I'll just share some of the common themes we heard from those three groups, because I think they're very consistent among the three of them. So in meeting preparers, audit committee members, and auditors, generally do not believe that the auditor should provide information that is not fact-based and subjective in nature. They think that any additional information they provide should be fact-based and doesn't have that level of subjectivity. They raised concerns that the auditor provided information that was in addition to or potentially conflicted with management's disclosures. It could have a couple effects which are not desirable. For example, it could obscure the responsibilities of management, the audit committee, and the auditor. For instance, if the auditor is the original source of information, then if it's management's responsibility, as Arnie articulated in the last session, to prepare financial statements, then does that just an inherent conflict? And also, audit committees have a responsibility in their oversight role to act on behalf of investors on the financial statements, to oversee the financial statement process. That includes the audit committee's responsibility to meet with both management and the external auditors. So if the auditor is down the original source of information, what does that say about the role of the audit committee? And also, the second major concern that came through was if the auditor disclosed additional information that wasn't fact-based and more subjective, it could have a potential negative effect on the relationship between management, the audit committee, and auditors. For example, some have said that management may be less willing to be or less open if they had concerns that the auditor may say something different than what they had said, or the audit committees may be less willing to be as open. So they're concerned about the potential effect it could have on the relationship. There are some other concerns that came up as well as far as providing additional information, and particularly information that isn't as fact-based. There were concerns about the cost and time it would take or that would result of providing such information. For example, time, if you think about the time that's spent preparing management's financial statements and MD&A or just the MD&A, there's a significant amount of time that goes into that by management. Then their counsel, general counsels review that. Their audit committees review it. So it's a very robust process. Similarly, if an auditor were to provide, like an auditor's discussion and analysis, many auditors felt a similar lengthy process would need to go through, that there would need to be some type of consistency. There'd be a lot of discussions with the company and the audit committee. The firm, national office, would need to review that to make sure as a firm they're being consistent in the types of information that was being disclosed. So there was concerns about the additional time that would take, which would therefore lead to an increase in cost. So moving forward, I guess on a positive note, while preparers, audit committees, and auditors were not supportive of changes that are not fact-based, as I just described, they were supportive of other changes. And in my view, I think in meeting with all of those groups, I sensed certainly an indication that change was needed or was appropriate to include in the auditor's report. Each of those groups had identified areas where change could occur. One was clarifying certain language in the auditor's report. That's one of the things that investors said they were interested in. So that goes to describing auditors' responsibilities for fraud, reasonable assurance, et cetera. Another was clarifying in an auditor's report what an audit does and does not represent. Some expressed concerns that an audit is essentially a clean bill of health on a company's financial, condition. The financial statements are intended to represent the results of the company. That could be good or bad, but it's presenting that information, and the opinion goes that information is presented fairly. But that audit does not represent that the company will continue, that they don't have significant business risks or things like that. So it, doesn't go to financial health. It goes to the fairness of the financial statements. So clarifying language in the report about what an audit does and does not represent. Another area where there was support for change is referring readers to significant areas in the financial statements such as critical accounting policies or estimates, by including references to management's disclosures. By doing that, while it would not be providing additional information or information that may be inconsistent with, it would be highlighting, you know, auditors' views on some of the significant areas. And so it does provide that, and then with references to where management's disclosures can be found. So that summarizes the views we heard at a very high level from investors, preparers, audit committee members, and auditors. We then, after hearing all of that, focused on possible ways for change, and that's really where I'm interested in some of your thoughts today. With regard to the audit report today, I guess before I get to the supplemental, I'll move it back so you're not focused on the slide at the moment. We asked investors about the current pass-fail report today. Is that appropriate? Should it be retained? Does it have any value? And what we heard, I think very consistently, is investors generally believe that the existing report should continue to make clear whether the financial statements are presented fairly or not. So in other words, to continue to have a pass-fail opinion, although investors, as I indicated earlier, said they would like language clarified in the report. What investors most desire to receive, though, is additional information from the auditor. So that came through with information about what the auditor did, what the auditor found, responsibilities for other information. The supplemental report would not modify the overall pass-fail opinion, but would provide additional information about the audit and what the auditor found. So there's three different possibilities that we heard as a possible way forward. So I'll describe each of these areas, and really then the remainder of the discussion like to focus on your thoughts on feasibility of these options and how we could potentially make requirements for auditors to write informative reports, supplemental reports. So the first option is auditors' discussion and analysis, or many have called AD&A for short, like MD&A. This format would have the appropriate language that would discuss that the AD&A is integral to the understanding of the audit opinion as a whole on the financial statements. However, it's not intended to represent separate assurance on any individual account, transaction, or disclosure. It could include all or some of the following. So it could include information about the audit, what the auditor did. So that would be materiality, what risks did the auditor identify. Could include information about the financial statements, auditor's views on the financial statements. And so that goes to some of the areas about auditor's views on management judgment and estimates, auditor's views on the quality, not just acceptability, of the accounting policies. Or it could include information about both the audit and auditor's views on the financial statements. The second area is an auditor emphasis of matters and statement of audit approach. Today in our auditing standards provide that auditors could emphasize certain matters, and that was discussed at the IAG meeting last week, and I think one person that one person that was surveyed in the discussion last week indicated that generally it's rarely used, and if at all, and today it's mostly around going concern. So one option is we could really require that for certain areas, that the auditor would emphasize matters. And there's also another type of report that exists today some of you may be familiar with or recall because we discussed it last April at our SAG meeting, is the French model report. So I view this option like a French model report, but maybe more. But that would be the structural foundation. But in the French model, in my view, it's like an emphasis of matter type of report. It highlights, it has what they call a justification of assessments section where the auditor really highlights about five significant areas. And it talks about what the auditor did overall, some of the auditor's overall procedures and testing, and then points to the financial statement disclosures. So it doesn't provide anything necessarily conflicting with what's disclosed by management, but some have said that type of format might have some benefits because, one, the auditor would highlight kind of the key areas that they identified. And two, with just highlighting those areas, it could cause management to have heightened attention or the audit committee on those disclosures, you know, if they were considered important by the auditor, to make sure that they are robust or gives investors some additional assurance on those disclosures. So that's the second area. And the third area that I'm interested in your feedback on is auditors' association with MD&A or, you know, reporting on MD&A or selected portions of it. One area that came up was that auditors could report on the critical accounting estimate section of the MD&A. As I mentioned previously, MD&A is not audited per se. There's no, auditors don't provide reasonable assurance on MD&A. So one option is auditors could report on that. This option would require SEC action, I believe, and we have had the SEC very much engaged in what we've been doing and apprised. So this option likely would require some type of change by them. But, you know, I don't know if some have viewed this might be a desirable option because those disclosures in MD&A are often, you know, seems to be many of the things that investors are interested in regarding auditors' views of, you know, the company's financial statements. So pointing to this and the auditor providing additional assurance, you know, may be of some benefit. So very interested in your views now. I'd like to hear from you now that I've spoken for the past few minutes. Interested in hearing your views on these options. Also, if you have a view as to one particular option, if you have any thoughts as far as what the audit requirements would look like. We've had some concerns that, you know, some are fearful of boilerplate disclosures by the auditor. So if you have any thoughts about how we could write the requirements so that they are robust by the auditor and not boilerplate, that seems to have a negative connotation, that would be very helpful. And I'm sorry. And, of course, I presented a very high overview of our findings, but if you had any particular questions about that, we'd be happy to answer any questions on those as well. So I see Doug Carmichael.
Just a suggestion. I think that I'd eliminate that third alternative. I think what you might do is take the requirement for the auditor's discussion and analysis and make it one of the things that the auditor would discuss would be all of the critical accounting policies. So if management makes disclosure in the MD&A of the critical accounting policies, then one of the things that the auditor would need to discuss in the auditor's discussion and analysis would be the audit approach to each of those critical accounting policies. So I think you could accomplish the important things that the auditor would be able to comment on by the requirements in another approach without getting the auditor involved in the MD&A, which is supposed to be a narrative discussion of the financial statements to let the investor see the financial statements through the eyes of management. And it just doesn't seem appropriate to get the auditor involved in that and something that's supposed to be insights from management. I think what would be valuable would be insights from the auditor on the audit in an auditor discussion and analysis. Rather than in the MD&A. The MD&A requirements, when they first came into being, were the results were very boilerplate. And I think you can expect the same thing with an auditor discussion and analysis. That it will, you can try to avoid that, but you probably need to view it more as an evolving process where you will state broad requirements and then continually to give implementation guidance based on the inspections of the auditor's work in accomplishing those objectives. It would be desirable to set requirements that wouldn't result in boilerplate, but I guarantee that that's what will happen, and it'll only be an evolving process to get away from that.
So just to make sure I heard you correctly, Doug, you're in favor of an ADNA approach, but was it anchored toward the critical accounting policies?
Yeah, I was just
and
suggesting
talk about the audit approach.
That would be one of the things that you could require be included in the auditor's discussion and analysis would be to speak to each of the critical accounting policies, and that you could accomplish any objectives that might be picked up by the third one without actually getting the auditor involved in the process of the MD&A, which would have a lot of disadvantages.
Okay, thank you. Wayne Collins.
Yeah, I just had a question on the feedback that you got from the audit committee representatives, preparers, and the auditors, that group. I think you said use the word fact-based, that they should only be involved with fact-based matters. I just wanted to get a better understanding of the context of what fact-based means and in order to get appropriate context of it. Some examples, perhaps.
Well, I think fact-based was meant not subjective or not really in conflict with management's disclosures. So management, as far as estimates, discussion of, estimates, critical accounting policies, critical accounting estimates, and management has its views and disclosures in the financial statements about those. And many investors have said they like to know the auditor's views about, okay, they recognize, estimates fall within, there's a number chosen within a range. And auditors may have had some discussions with the audit committee and management about where that falls on the range. Maybe it's starting to shift within the range. Do they feel that the company consistently tends to be at one end of the range or versus the other? Investors really view auditors, the audit process as being important, as being robust. And many companies, they pay millions of dollars for an audit. They know auditors spend 1,000 hours. And the report, which is one page, doesn't provide that much. They're interested in, the auditor has an independent third party hired to do a very important job and interested in the views they, from the auditor. They know, for example, in a private transaction on an acquisition of an entity, an auditor may be hired to help do due diligence for the company that wants to acquire the target. And auditors often write due diligence reports that are very lengthy, certainly more than one page, talking about any concerns about possible, the financial accounting policies, estimates, ranges, many different factors, and that's the type of information that they had concerns with disclosing in a public report because concerns that they may not understand the context of all of that.
I'll add to that a little bit. I think information about the audit, what the auditor viewed as key risks and what the auditor did in response to that might be fact-based, as opposed to information about the auditor's subjective view as to the reasonableness of an input to an assumption is a subjective matter. And the second category, emphasizing certain matters in the footnotes being important, fact-based, and what the auditor's approach was. So it's really difference between more objective information versus subjective information.
Okay, Larry Salva.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'm not as troubled maybe as some of the others with whether it's subjective or objective or fact-based. Auditors are professionals, and if they've formed a professional view that management's estimates tend to be biased towards low end or high end of ranges, if that's the view that they take out of the audit, I'm, as I said, probably not, maybe not as troubled as others might be with them expressing that view at the conclusion of their audit. I think that does provide some insight, the management's approach to preparing the financial statements. But I do think that We have to remember, or at least I think we need to separate the function of assertion is the responsibility of management, and auditors attest, and it's only they should only be put in a position of providing additional information to the extent that it's needed to supplement what's been asserted by management. So if management assertion is the financial statements, and then they need to provide additional supplemental information, just as if they were to take an adverse opinion, you would provide more information about what would have to be adjusted in the financial statements to remove that exception. I think that's the context in which we should ask auditors to supplementally provide more information. Clearly, they can make assertions about their audit approach because that's something that they're responsible for. But the assertions about the financial statements themselves, I think should stay with management. So the approach that you take, whether it be an ADNA or an emphasis approach, I think that's kind of like more form than any one of those might be possible. That's just the kind of the form that you would you'd put that communication into. I guess it might be easier or logistically easier to deal with it in a ADNA approach because you might be able to do that without SEC action. But at the same time, I wouldn't object to having auditors review and take some responsibility for the completeness and accuracy of management's assertion in the MD&A about critical accounting judgments and estimates. So whether they do that separately in their own communication saying how they addressed all the critical areas in the financial statements, presumably, hopefully you'd find a match between what they thought was important and what management was asserting were their critical judgments and estimates. But if there isn't that match, it's kind of a red flag. If the auditors identify 10 areas that they spent significant areas of focus on, and management's only identified one, you'd say that there's something wrong there.